All right, this is the 50th in the series, milestone 50, entitled Av Shalom's, what's that? I should have thought of it. Av Shalom's Rebellion. So he last left Av Shalom. He had murdered his brother and fled, gone into hiding, and through the intervention of Yoav, David allowed him to return to Yerushalayim, but refused to see him. So that was a source of tremendous anguish and resentment to Avshalom. So Avshalom chafed over the ostracism, and then he decided to act. He acted in a way which, in which his character comes through very clearly. He had not seen his father now for 2 years since he had killed Amnon. So begin at number one. It's Perek Yudalet Pasuk Chav Tes. Vayishlach Avshalom el Yoav l'shlach al Sar Lamelech. Avshalom sent a message to Yoav that he should again intervene, wanted to see his father. He'd stagnated. V'lo avol avoy lov. And his father refused to see him. And in fact, Yoav refused to come to Avshalom. And you remember last time we discussed that perhaps one of the reasons why Yoav sent for Avshalom, strike that. One of the reasons why Yoav had interceded to bring Avshalom back was he was hoping to hedge his bets, since Avshalom was the crown prince. So therefore, he thought it good to strike up a relation with Avshalom as well. But now, after 2 years, Yoav sees that Avshalom is no closer to reconciliation, so he ignores him. He sent him for him a second time, and again Yoav refused. So now he acts. He says to his servants, look at Yoav's field, which is next to mine. V'loshom se'arim, it's a barley field. L'chu v'hatzisu avoesh, go and set his field on fire. V'yatzitu avdei Avshalom eshalchalko bo'esh. And so in fact they set, Avshalom's servants set Yoav's field on fire. V'yokom Yoav v'yavol Avshalom, so that got Yoav's attention, came to Avshalom, Abaisa, to his house, and said to him, why did your servant set my field on fire? Vayomer Avshalom Yoav. Avshalom says to Yoav quite sternly, Hine sholachti elecho lemor, behold, I sent for you, saying, Bo heino, come here, Veshlecho Schel Amelech lemor, Loma vosi mikshur, Tov liot anisham. I sent for you that you should tell the king, why did I return from Geshur to Yerushalayim? I should have just stayed there. Here I'm under house arrest. And now I want to see the king, and if I'm guilty of anything, let the king put me to death. That's why he interceded. In fact, it worked. It worked either because the argument persuaded Yoav, or the argument terrified Yoav, that Avshalom is a little out of control. In any event, Yoav went to the king and said to the king, Vayikrel Avshalom, Vayavol HaMelech, Vayishtachu lo al apov arzo lefnei HaMelech. King called for Avshalom. He came. He bowed down to him. Vayishak HaMelech l'Avshalom. And the king kissed Avshalom. Chazal note, Vayishak le, the Malbim says, and others. Vayishakla, kissing too is not the same as kissing. It's almost a, not insincere, but it's not a, a fully heartfelt kiss. To kiss to someone, as opposed to kiss someone. It's almost like they kiss in Europe. They miss each other's cheeks. That's Vayishakla, kissing someone. So the reconciliation was not complete, and yet on the surface they had returned. Now, what's wrong with Avshalom that he sets fire to Yoav's field? So no doubt he was asserting that he was not to be trifled with. He was setting the parameters of their relationship, that if Yoav assumed he would be Avshalom's patron by bringing him back to Yerushalayim, so now he in fact was an unsuccessful patron, and therefore Yoav was put in his place, and more as well. Destroying a field is the right of the king. That's eminent domain. If the king has a need of private property for public use, then he can seize it, even destroy it. Here Avshalom was reaffirming that he in fact is royalty and worthy of Malchus by assuming one of the roles of the king, and that is eminent domain. But he does in such a heavy-handed and really un-Jewish way. If you look at the Oz Melech, Rav Ariel, in number 2, he says, "B'sreifat chalkata sadeh tamun gam remez ha-muchrach la-kpitzet Yoav lorak biglau ha-ovel v'azadon shebo." The burning of the field is something that will not only startle Yoav for another reason, not just that it's evil. And you see later on in Shmuel Beis, when in Perek Chof Gimel, the Navi is recording the activities of the warriors of David HaMelech. One of those warriors mentioned is a Jew by the name of Shama ben Eger Harari. Shama ben Eger was one of David's soldiers, and Shama found himself an earlier time in history, a few years earlier, at war with the Plishtim. And the Navi says that they came upon the field. Vayeyasu Plishtim lachaya. The Plishtim brought a whole battalion. Vatisham chelkasa sadem eladashim. The Plishtim army gathered in a field of lentils. Vihaam nos mipnei Plishtim. And the whole people, Shamo's army, his battalion fled when they saw the Plishtim. Shamo himself did not. He stood in the middle of the field and protected the Jewish field. He smote the Plishtim. And God brought about a great salvation on that day. What's the point? So he continues in Oz Melech. Hatzalat chalkat asodeh, imitus agvura shel malchut beit David, ubo pagav shalom. Saving Jewish property is really the methodology of the Jewish king, especially malchus beit David. Defending even a field of lentils, which is a very simple crop, that really is a indication of the courage, of the bravery, of the royal house of Israel, as opposed to the opposite. So, Srefat Chalkata Sadeh L'tzorach HaTzibur Muteret, there's no doubt. If there had been some legitimate governmental need, so you're allowed to burn even Jewish property in order to effect some national need. And yet, Avol David lo ishtamesh b'samchuto kemelech l'vgoa b'zchuyot haprat. David himself never exercised that right of encroaching on the private property of Jews, certainly not destroying Jewish land in order to achieve any end. In fact, the Jewish king doesn't ever wantonly destroy Jewish property, because that negates the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which is the whole one of the functions of the monarchy. The true righteous king of Israel preserves and extends Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, exactly like David always did. Destruction is a sign of rishus, and it's a sign also of a monarchy that can't last. As the Gemara Sota, Daf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, indicates in number 3, Rav Chista Mar, Rav Chista said, Gemir, we have a tradition, Kol Asaref Tu Aso Shel Chavero, Ein HaMenech Ben Liyorsho, a person who burns the produce of the field of his friend, he will not leave behind an heir. Ve'iyu kalye l'diyoav, and Avshalom burnt the field of Yoav, as the Pasuk says, and therefore Avshalom had the monarchy stripped from him, for other reasons, but this is a reason as well. It means, Asarev tu asoshel chavero, Einar Maniach Ben Liyarsho, it means a person who is negating, counteracting Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, destroying a field of someone else. So if he's harming the connection of the Jewish people to the land, so his posterity is also diminished. His posterity is in fact negated as well, because what a person assaults the integrity of the land of Israel, so it means that he has no share in the destiny of Israel. And the way a person has no share in the destiny of Israel is to deprive them of children. That's Eino Menech Ben Liyarsho, and that really becomes the fate of Avshalom now. It's an omen. Not only is it a window into Avshalom's soul, but it's an omen that Avshalom's future was ill-fated. And in fact, it was. So who was Avshalom? What type of personality did he have? So let's look at number four, which is in the Perek Yudal, a few psukim earlier, and we'll see his try to understand his motivation. Avshalom, there was no one in the land of Israel who was as praised for his beauty. It was a perfect physical specimen from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, especially what became his trademark. When at the end of every year he would cut his hair because it was very heavy, his hair would weigh 200 shekels by the king's shekels. That was a heavy weight to bear on one's head. What does it mean? So the Radak says in number 5, Uchav shalom lohoy ish yofeh samoch l'sipur hamered shemarad baviv. Right before the Navi tells us, relates the story of the rebellion against his father, Sipir Magaram Loze, he tells us exactly what caused it. Kihoy Yofeh, he was beautiful, handsome, Ubechol Yisrael Lohoy Chamo, and in all of Israel there was none like him. Vinizgoebe Yofio Visaro, and he took pride, excessive pride, almost arrogance, in his hair. And because of his appearance, he thought he ain roi l'mlucha mibnei David kamohu. He thought there was none who was as worthy of kingship as he was. So in fact, we're all intelligent people. Why would we think that just because a person is handsome, therefore he's fit to be royalty? Why would we think such a thing? I don't know why, but it happens to be one of the cornerstones of modern politics, especially in America. That's just the way it is. Because most people are superficial, and that's what they see. So very often you'll hear in the media, the great chachamim, the pundits of the Dor, who will say, this person looks presidential. What does it mean? He's tall, he's graying hair, you know, in today's climate, no facial hair, he's not overweight, but he keeps himself in good shape, he looks, speaks with a deep voice, he looks presidential. We'll say he looks like a justice. That's how a justice should look. That type of superficiality, of course, gets citizens the type of leaders that they deserve. But people are people. And Avshalom had that appearance, and he assumed that this appearance gave him more than that to which he was entitled. So he was arrogant and naturally gravitated towards Malucha. But it was an especially volatile brand of arrogance because it was mixed with a sort of krumkeit. Why did he have such long hair? So that continues in Pasuk Chavav. When he shaved his hair, Amru Chazal, Kev Shalom, Nizir Olam Hoyo, Kein Hoysa Kabbalah B'yodo. We have a tradition that Avshalom was a Nizir Olam. A Nizir Olam cuts his hair once a year. Other than that, he does not. The psukim, you don't see that. He efshu megadol sara liyofi sara lizgalos bo lisnos. Radak says a simple pshat is he just did it for his own appearance. He liked the way it looked, and others did as well. But Chazal say in the Gemara, it's in Nozer Davhei, if I remember correctly, Chazal say that he was a Nazir only. Now it's interesting, not too surprising that a person can be a Nazir and be a Rasha as well, because Nazirus is external and Rishus is internal. A person can wear the garb of a tzaddik and yet have the midos of a Rasha. There's really no contradiction. We see that constantly, because it's very easy to put on an act. So Avshalom solidified his religious credentials by the appearance of a Nazir, even though he was corrupt through and through. Even in the few psukim we've read about him, so far he's killed his brother and he's burned the field of Yoav ben Tzruya. It doesn't stop from being a Nazir. Now why the hair? So the Maharal says here, flip to the Gemara first, in 6, in Sota Daf Yidam and Beis, Avshalom Nizgoy Bisaro. We'll see Avshalom took pride in his hair, right? So that Mishnah ends at the end of the Keta here, Lefichach Nitle Bisaro. In the end, he will be hanged by his hair. That's how he will die. But Tanur Rabbanan, Avshalom Bisaro Morad, he rebelled with his hair, meaning his hair was his ticket to leadership. Strange as it sounds. It sounds strange when we read it, until we realize you can read these things in the newspapers every day. Someone who doesn't have the physical stature of leadership is not going to succeed. As a matter of fact, they're so sensitive, for example, they're so sensitive to appearance, that whenever there's a presidential debate, the podiums and stands are modified so everybody's on the same height. There shouldn't even be an inch of difference between the candidates. If one is 6 feet, 6'3", then they'll adjust it so that they look to be the same height. This first was done, if I remember correctly, at the request of Michael Dukakis in 1988, because he was much shorter than the elder Bush. And so if people are looking, watching the debate, and they see one person speaking from up here and one from down here, it makes the wrong impression. So he insisted he get to stand on a little podium. But appearance matters. Avshalom used his hair for these purposes, and the weight was a tremendous weight. Now, the Maharal saw certain symbolism, Maharal and Soto. The Yesh Cholotas, number 11, Ki Avshalom Nesgo Bisairo, Ki Aseor Shel Odom Utosefes V'yoser. Avshalom became haughty as a result of his hair. And what is hair really? Hair is tosefes v'yeser. Hair is something which is extraneous, which is superfluous, something which is extra, which is a luxury. You know, hair today, gone tomorrow. It doesn't indicate anything about a person, but it shows that sort of superficiality, or better said, that obsession with what is temporary, as opposed to what is permanent, that it is a very substantive characteristic of the superficial individual. As you know, people obsess on their hair, because I guess when you look at a person, that's what you first notice about them, even though it, you know, tends to recede, at least for men over time, not for Ethan, of course, but for others. Not only that, but the hair is regularly removed. That's how temporary it is. Whatever's growing, whatever we have on our heads now, 4 months or it's going to be gone. Gone entirely, or gone because it's been replaced by other hair that comes in after you keep cutting it. So the Maharal says that really is what hair represents. Hair is something which is on the surface, and only on the surface. It indicates nothing about the person, and yet that became his obsession because that was a reflection of his personality. V'davar zehu chisaron. That really is a deficiency in the individual. And here you see as well, kal davar kimidas avshalom v'kashev lam luchol izgadlo b'gdula asher ein roi lo litol machus aviv ki hayerodev hatosefes v'amoseres. What Avshalom did really was seize that which was not really his, not permanent, a tosefes, something extra. What was the extra? Not just his hair, was extra was his father's monarchy and his father's right prerogative to choose his successor. So he sees that as well. In any event, Naziris Olam is a good cover for a troubled personality, and it was for Avshalom as well. So Avshalom had the appearance of a politician, appearance of a leader. What else did he have? A good name. He had a good name for a leader. Avshalom, father of peace. How could you fault such a name like that? That's a good name. You need a presidential name also. All right. That's why people speak of name recognition. That's part of it. Not just that you know the person, but you associate that person with leadership. It becomes fixed in the mind as a leader. If you think about it, the name Bush has been on the presidential ballot in 4 of the last 5 presidential elections. 80, 84, 88, 92, 2000, 2004. It's 5 out of 6, actually. That's name recognition. The name is associated with leadership. So he had a good name, too, Avshalom. Now, what were his plans? How did he try to foment his rebellion? So let's look at number 7. Begins Perek Tesvav. Vayimacharechein vayasla Avshalom merkavo v'susim. After this, after the partial reconciliation with his father, Avshalom prepared for himself a chariot and horses. V'chamishim ish ratzim lefanov. 50 people running before him. An entourage. If you turn the page for a second, look at the Malbim, at number 18. Acharesha siper asibos. After the reasons for the rebel, which we'll get to in a second, misaper achanos sheichin Avshalom ozeh. The Navi starts talking about the preparations he made. Mitzad echad, herod bedulaso shenehek betachsisei melucha sheichin asus v'chel u'merkava. What did he prepare for himself? The trappings of royalty. So again, once you have the appearance and you have the good name recognition, you need to have the royal entourage to make people start thinking of you as the king as well. You need the trappings of a king. And then he did something which was even more evil. Vishkim Avshalom, regularly, Avshalom would get up early in the morning. V'amad al yad derech hashar, he would stand alongside the gate. Any person who had a dispute that the king would have to judge, Avshalom would say to this person, Emi Zairato, from what city are you from? Vayomer would say, Machad Shiftei Yisrael Avdecha, I'm from such and such a tribe. And Avshalom would say to him, tell me your case. And then he would say, Re'ei Dvarecha Tovim Nechachim, it seems to me that what you're saying is good and proper. V'shomea ein l'chameis ha-melech. But there's no one before the king who can understand you, who sees it the way you do. Vayomer Avshalom, mi yisimeni shofet ba'aretz. Would that I would be appointed a judge in the land, then there'd be justice and peace. V'olai yavo cholish asher yelo rivu mishpat v'hitztaktiv. Then a person would come to me and I would be able to give him justice. Right now in the kingdom as it is, you get no justice, which was an attack on his father. Anyone would come near to him, he'd grab his hand, hold on to him, and kiss him, which is also the tactic of the politician, to try to shake as many hands and kiss as many babies as possible. Continues the Malbim. He would say, essentially, like really all the politicians that make promises, if I were in charge, your life would be easier. There'd be justice, there'd be prosperity, there'd be peace. Right now, there's no one. I mean, what is every politician, especially the opposition, will always say that the government, the rulers in charge, are out of touch with the people, that the people have no voice. That's exactly what they say, and that's taken from, probably unwittingly, Avshalom's arguments here. He's saying to everyone with whom he comes into contact, you have no voice. you have no patron in Yerushalayim, in the palace. That's why I'm here. So the Malbim continues in Pasuk Beis, Bitzad Sheini Hera Anvasel, he showed it in the form of humility. Avas Tzedek U'Mishpat, Avas Aam, a love of justice, a love of the people. And with all these, the Navi ends that with all this, Vayas Avshalom Kadavar Hazel L'chol Yisrael Hashem V'Mishpat Al-Melech, Vayaganev Avshalom Aslev Anshei Yisrael. Avshalom stole their hearts. He stole their hearts. And the Malbim continues, he would stand there. You want the leader to be accessible. Anybody could talk to. From what tribe are you? Giving the impression that his father favors his tribe. If you're from one of the lesser tribes, then you can get no justice. Also implying, the Malbim says, that Vazehishrish Bilibam Shamelchol Yishma Mishpateam Miziknuso Homeatzloso. The king cannot really hear your pleas anymore because he's elderly. David was 67 now. He's lazy. As we know, he was extremely aggrieved by the sin of with Bathsheba, and he went out of commission for a number of years. Avshalom's argument, his attempt to curry favor, essentially saying, if I was the judge, there'd be justice. So it really is just a terrible breach of faith. You know, the halacha is that on a din Torah, if the vote is 2-1, meaning one side wins, the losing judge, so to speak, the dissenting judge, is not allowed to say. It's also to say to the losing party, I was with you. What could I do? They voted against me 2-1. It's also to say, Lashon Hara, or other reasons. It's also. And here, Avshalom will say even worse than that, saying there's no justice at all. But if I were there, it would be different. So what he did was he riled up the people against his father. He won many supporters. People always look for change. And he developed the following. He developed the following, and it was a very large following. Vayeganev Avshalom Aslev Anshei Yisrael. He stole their hearts. Now we have to understand exactly, yes. Actually, we're millions. Never. You're talking thousands. But think about it, because this is how the politician operates. If I'm a politician, I do a favor for you, all right? And you have a circle of 10 friends, and the election comes up, or whatever issue comes up, and your friend said, you know this politician? And you say, yes, he did a favor for me. That's not only influencing you, it's influencing the others as well. And that's how they operate. Chavra, chavrisle. That's how they operate. One person will tell others, spread the word, that this is a good fellow. Now, why did the rebellion start? I mean, what was the motivation? Clearly it was personal. But in fact, as we'll see in a moment, David had to flee Yerushalayim because he was outnumbered. The majority of the people went after Avshalom. And where does that come from? We're talking about David Melech Yisrael. Chayvakayom, he barely didn't live out his life. He had to flee. So where does it come from? Rebellions are always multifaceted. Always. You have malcontents of different types with different issues. It's the same thing, whether it's a kingdom, a government, a corporation, a shul, a yeshiva. It's always the same. You'll have a group of malcontents of different issues, different concerns, but they band together. That's what Chazal say. They speak of machlokas shalom l'shem shemayim. What's the machlokas l'shem shemayim? That's Beisil Beishama. You have two sides. What's the machlokas shalom l'shem shemayim? Machlokas korach v'adoso. Why doesn't it say korach and Moshe? Because Moshe wasn't involved. Korach v'adoso, machlokas korach v'adoso means that even Korach and his Edo were not on the same page. Even they fought with each other. Even they had different interests. As we know, Korach had one set of interests, Dosan and Aviram, another, Ong Ben Pelas a third, the 250 Nisihedo a fourth. Everybody had a different agenda. So here, it's the exact same thing. Rav Ariel writes in Oz Melech that you have a conglomerate of malcontents. People always harboring a grievance. Say, Shevet Binyamin, who had been the tribe of royalty until David took over. So, you had the other families in Yehuda who couldn't get over that the youngest of the brothers of one person, Ishai, was chosen and not them. You had people aggrieved that David left Hebron, which was the center of Yehuda, to go to Yerushalayim. You had the old palace guard, the old bureaucracy. You had the peaceniks who were tired of David's wars. He was constantly at war, expanding our territory. You had the moral critics of David saying he's unfit to be the ruler because of the variety of sins. And you had people who were tired of the roller coaster of the palace intrigue, of having to read about, to hear about David and all his adventures constantly, because David, his whole life was turbulent, running from Saul, and then the problems with his wives, and I mean, all the discussions we've had over the last really year and a half of David HaMelech. Everything becomes a tzara, culminating, of course, in Bathsheba, and then Amnon is killed, Avshalom, and even after this it gets worse. So people are tired of that. And you always have among the malcontents people who just want to change. They want quiet. David was too intense. His existence was too profile, too high profile for them. What a disparate group of malcontents always needs is a unifying personality. And that was Avshalom. That unifying personality. Look at number 8, the Ralbag, on the end of, on the Vayganev Avshalom Aslev Anshei Yisrael, number 8, Rabbag says, Ratzuloma, Be'elu Hakzavim, with these lies that Avshalom spread about his father, about his abilities, about his moral character, about the supposed injustice in the land, Ki'ilu Ganav Libam Me'is HaMelech David, as if he stole their hearts away from David. We look back at David because we sing about him. We think he must have been so popular, you know, from beginning to end. No, he wasn't. He wasn't. There was a time that he was, and then he fell out of favor. Yes? It's a good question. It's a good question. It probably did. It probably did. The thing is, the killing of Amnon is not the type of thing that's going to arouse people's anger. Why? Because Amnon raped his sister, Tamar. So, what's that? Vengeance. People respect that. People respect that. That's right. If you, I mean, now we hold ourselves to be more sophisticated, but let's say 50, 60 years ago, if you would be on trial for killing someone who raped your child, the jury would not acquit, would not convict you. You understand? That's a natural human emotion. It's natural to fight back against injustice, especially when you see society is tolerant of it. So I don't know if that would lose Avshalom any support. If anything, would gain him support as a person standing up for justice. Now the question becomes, why? I mean, how did this take place? Why did Avshalom just wait? He saw himself as the crown prince, so why not just wait for David to die? David is old. Or try to win David's favor, not try to overthrow him. Well, a few things went wrong. One of them is that Avshalom suspected that Shlomo would succeed him. Shlomo was a child at this point. I think now, just to do the calculations, he's probably 8 or 9 years old. But he probably heard through the grapevine, and he wanted to preempt that, by seizing the monarchy now. Chazal, of course, have a very keen and critical eye. Look at the Tanchuma in 9. All right, it's in Tanchuma, the beginning of Shemot. Mitoch Shlo Rodo Aviv Avshalom Yotzel Tarbus Ra, because David did not ride Avshalom enough. He didn't give him rules. He didn't discipline him enough. That's why he went astray, went off the derech. He didn't rein him in earlier. He could have reined him in any time, and he didn't. Even with the situation with Amnon. What did David choose to do? Basically ignore the situation. So because he didn't try to discipline him, That's why Avshalom kept going further and further off the derech. Look at number 10, something else. Yeah. That's correct. That could very well be, trying to gain his father's attention by these miscreant deeds. So Gemara says, "Anidu da chavdala mit beis." Tani Avshalom mer kover mesim oisi. Avshalom says he was a grave digger. Pamachas niftucha meora tachtai. Once he was digging a grave, and an old cave opened up beneath him. V'amaniti begalgal eino shel meis ad chodmi. He saw the eye of a corpse to his nose, a tremendous large eye. Kishechazarti lacharai, when I came back to my other diggers, Amru, they said, Ayin shalav shalom haisa. That was Avshalom's eye. Meaning what? What's a big eye? A big eye is what Bilam had. A big eye means an insatiable appetite. And that's what Avshalom had as well. That was part of his ego, part of his haughtiness, stemming from his hair, but even just the hair is just the symptom, not the cause. Well, the eye sees and covets and must have. So that's below sasur achrei levavchem achrei necha. Because what the eye sees, the heart covets, and the person must have. Avshalom was insatiable, and he was unstoppable. Now, most poskim maintain that Avshalom tried to kill David, and that's why David fled. The minority dissenter is the Abarbanel. He says in 16, the Omer Avshalom lo kivein la'arug es David aviv v'lo ala libo. He says Avshalom never thought of killing his father. He didn't want to kill David. He only wanted David to step aside. And all his followers also would not have agreed to kill David. Who can stretch forth his hand against God's anointed and be acquitted? Avshalom wanted to rule while his father was alive. And this is what I said before. Because he thought first that his father had not forgiven him for Amnon, and his father favored Shlomo, and so by this Avshalom would preempt that, essentially by deposing his father. Or he says in 17, and a second reason, really a second approach, Shavshalom ro'es aviv zokain. His father was old already. He couldn't rule. Avshalom had now turned 40. 40 is the prime of life. David himself had taken over when he was 40. Ben Arbon Labino. So now he held himself. So the Abarbanel actually has a less harsh view of Avshalom. That his motivation was not completely impure. He thought himself worthy, but most of the Mefarshim disagree with him. I guess we could suggest that the Abarbanel is late enough. This parish he wrote in the early 1500s, the Abarbanel was an advisor to kings, not just Ferdinand Isabel, the treasurer, but also the king of Portugal, and later in the various states in Italy after he was exiled there, after the expulsion in 1492. But Barbanel always took a dim view of rebellions, obviously, because he was in charge of making sure that those rebellions did not happen. But nonetheless, most Mefarshim say it's not so, and from the context of the Psukim, which we'll see in a moment, it would seem that Avshalom himself wanted to kill his father and take over. As drastic and as evil as that sounds. Let's look at number 12. We won't read every pasuk, but we'll get just to the gist of the story, what Avshalom did. After 40 years, the Rashi says it's 40 years since the people had asked Shmuel for a king. 40 years. But the Abarbanel says it means he was 40. He said to the king, let me go now and repay my vow that I vowed to Hashem in Chevro. So the symbolism, of course, should be obvious to us. He wanted to pay, said he made a neder when he was on the run in Geshur. But if you look at 13, the end of the Radak, he says, Lefisho yedaito limros vilimloch b'chara makom shukam b'aviv lemelech. What was he doing? Duplicating David's rise to monarchy. Essentially, he was going back to Hebron to start the rebellion there in the seat of Shevet Yehuda. So he chose the very place in which his father had been coronated as king. And he says, I made this vow, I have to go. Vayomer lo hamelech, lech b'shalom. Go in peace. Vayakom vayelech Hebrono. All David said was, lech b'shalom, go in peace. From here and elsewhere, I have famous Chazal, it's number 14, Gemara, the end of Brachos, Daf Samech Dal Amar Aleph, Amar Rabbi Ovin, Halevi, Hanifta Mechavero, Al Yomer Lo Lech B'Shalom. When you're saying goodbye to someone, you never say, go in peace, Lech B'Shalom, Elo Lech L'Shalom, go to peace. Shara Yisro, Shem Elo L'Moshe Lech L'Shalom, Olav Etzliach. Yisro said to Moshe, go to peace. Moshe was successful. David, Shomer Lelav Shalom, Lech Bishalom, Halach Benitle. David said to Hashem, go to peace. And in fact, he was hanged. And Rav Ovin continued that when you depart from the mace, someone who's deceased, then you say, Lech Lishalom. I'm sorry, then you say, Lech Bishalom. Go in peace, and not to peace. And the Marsha in 15, if you care to strain your eyes, explains why. Because Lech Lishalom means go to a destination. During our lives, we're in the process of constant movement and growth and achievement. So that's a destination. Lishalom. Dehayne sheyitzlach b'masa b'chol makom. Wherever you are, you should find that peace. That's a destination which is always progressing. As opposed to afterlife, lech bishalom, go in peace, meaning one has reached his final destination, so therefore, there's no other place to go. That is lech bishalom. That limud comes from here. That's what David said to him. Now, the Navi continues, Vayishlach Avshalom miraglim b'chol shiftei Yisrael lemor. Avshalom sent spies to all the tribes, saying, Kishomachem eskol ha-shofar. When you hear the sound of the shofar, va'amartem, you'll say, Molach Avshalom b'chevron. Avshalom rules in Chevron. He's become the king. Now, in fact, what this means, to answer Ethan's point from before, is that he met people from various tribes, and he got supporters. So what they did, the communications were non-existent then. What they had to do, though, was coordinate, that at a certain day and time, everyone would stand in the public square throughout the tribes of Israel, and announce, Avshalom is now the king. Avshalom is now the king. It will take time, days if not weeks, for people to recognize that it's a rebellion, rather than that maybe David had died, because news didn't travel very fast. By the time people realize it's a rebellion, they will have already joined Avshalom. In fact, that's what happened. Avshalom halchu masayim ish mirushalayim, 200 men from Yerushalayim went with Avshalom. They went innocently to Chevron. They didn't know his plan. He sent for Achitofel Agiloni, Yoetz David, whose treachery we'll discuss more next week. Via Kesher Amitz, the conspiracy was very powerful. Ve'am Holech Varov es Avshalom, and the people who went with Avshalom continually increased in number. The word went out, Malach Avshalom b'chevron. The Magid came back to David and said, Hayol lev ish Yisrael achrei Avshalom. The heart of every man of Israel has turned to Avshalom. Vayomer David l'chol avadov asher tev Yerushalayim. Who could imagine such a thing? David turned to his servants in Yerushalayim. Kumu v'nivracha. Let us arise and flee. Kiloti alonu fleitam ibne Avshalom. There'll be no escape from Avshalom. Ma'arul aleches. Let's go quickly. Penya maher visigonu. Lest he hurry and catch us. V'idiach aleinu es hara'ah. And throw upon us this evil. V'ka'ir l'fi charev. And the city will be will be smitten by the sword. That was Avshalom's rebellion. Stan Chevron, again, really kedarko, pretended to go to Avshalom for Avodas Hashem. David acquiesces, and now he flees. Some say that he fled because he doesn't want to bring bloodshed to Yerushalayim, which is understandable. Others say that he fled because he feels he deserves the onesh. In fact, a little later on in Pasuk Chafei, he gives vent to that emotion. His followers, including the Kohen Gadol, bring out the Aron HaKodesh to where he's hiding in the desert, and he says to Tzadok, Hoshev es Aron Elokim Oyer, bring it back to the city. In Em Tzochem Beinei Hashem Beshivani, if I find favor in God's eyes, then He'll bring me back to Yerushalayim. V'hirani oso v'esnoveyu, and I'll behold Him and His abode, meaning His temple, which will be built. V'imko yomar, and if He says, lo chofatz tibach, if God essentially rules against David, continuing the punishment, hineni yaseh li kasher tov beinov, let Him do with me as He sees fit. That was David's attitude. He runs for his life, but in fact he's not abandoned by everyone. If you look at the psukim, he has faithful followers who follow him really to victory. One of them was Ittai HaGiti. It's a very common name in Israel these days. Ittai, Aleph Tav Yud. Ittai HaGiti was one of David's faithful warriors, and David said to him, you can go back to Yerushalayim, they won't suspect you. Nochriata, Nochri meaning either you're one of the Plishtim from Gat who joined with me. Apparently when David was in Gat fleeing from Shaul, he was able to do Kirev work there. So he brought people back with him. One of them was Ittai HaGiti. Others say he was a Jew who lived there, but nonetheless he wasn't a regular in Yerushalayim. And Ittai said, no, I owe you chesed v'emes for what you've done for me. See, Chai Hashem was against him. And it seems as if an overwhelming majority was against him. Achitofel, one of his close advisors, betrayed him. David was distraught. And you can't imagine, it's probably the low point of his monarchy. But it's at this low point that David recaptures his spiritual grandeur. And he begins to take another look. Look at number 20. Which is the Gemara Maseches Sota, the bottom of Yud Amud Beis. It's this year at the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara quotes a pasuk later about Avshalom, but ends Amr Chanina Bar Papa, Be'etza Amuka Shel Malkul Shel Olam. But even Avshalom acted, and David certainly had this perspective as well, that whatever was happening to him came from the very deep counsel of the Melech HaOlam of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tichsiv. David was promised, warned, that there'd be four punishments for Bathsheba, one of them Avshalom, and now he feels that this is upon him. It's a beautiful chazal, because, I mean, David had a number of low points in his life. I think I've used that phrase a few times. Fleeing Shaul, abandoned by everyone, and certainly after some Bathsheba. And now too, his own son turns on him. And the people whom he had served so faithfully, and whose borders he expanded, and who he had made prosperous, they turn on him also. Kapitel Gimel in Tehillim. Mizmor leDavid. Bivarcho mipnei Avshalom beno. David wrote a mizmor when he fled from Avshalom his son. So the Gemara in Brachos, Dav Zayin with Beis Ass, I ran out of room on the page. So the Gemara says, Mizmor le David, a song of David when he fled Avshalom. Kino Mibayle, it should have been a lament of David HaMelech. What is he singing that his own son drove him out of the palace, wanted to kill him? Omer Avshimben Avishalom. Avshimben said, Mashal lema davar domeh, parable, a person who had a debt levied against him. Before the debt is paid, he said, once the debt is paid, now he's happy. You burn the mortgage in a festive ceremony. Once it's paid. Afkan. David, Kevon Shamala Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hili Mekim Alecha Rami Beisecho, you'd say, once God said that you're going to have this evil in your own home, he was sad. And the Gemara says, what made him most concerned, most anxious? He thought maybe someone in his house, maybe one of his advisors, maybe a servant, maybe a mamzer, maybe someone will rise against him without rachmanus. Kevon dechaz avshalom. Now that he saw his avshalom, somach, he was happy. Mishum hachi mizmar. Because, again, it's one of these points in Tanakh that we don't know with any certainty. We don't know with any certainty. Would Avshalom have killed David, like most Mefarshim say? Would he certainly not have killed David, like the Abarbanel says? We just don't know. It's a mystery. Chazal assume, you know, in the Gemara Makos, dealing with these inyonim, that a parent will never kill a child, but a child could kill a parent. It's not Makos, it's Sanhedrin, the Baba Machteres case. It's in the Perek of Baba Machteres, that if a child burglarizes a house, so the father can kill him, because the child may come to kill the father, but a parent will never kill a child. I don't know if that chazak applies anymore today, because Nebuch, you see parents killing children all the time. Too often, two in the last week, just in the New York area. But nonetheless, that's the chazaka. So David may have felt samach, if anyone Avshalom will have less more rachmonos on him than an outsider, someone who's not blood. But in any event, what's the essential source of his joy? Mizmor l'David, because he sees the debts being paid. As painful as it is, the debt is being paid. This is a beautiful capital, David writes. Like many of them, which he just completely surrenders to the will of God. Ein Yeshua so lo belokim selo. There's no salvation but in God. Vata Hashem magen badi. You God, you are my shield. And it ends, next to the last pasuk, the pasuk we say all the time, La Hashem Yeshua al amcha birchasecha selo. Salvation is God's, and when God's salvation comes forth, then that blessing devolves upon his people as well. Thus, with David's security in the Ratzon Hashem, his surrender to the Ratzon Hashem, we'll see that Avshalom's plans are really foiled. Before it gets better, though, it gets worse. And one of the things that David has to deal with is the treachery of Achitophel. Achitophel, one of the most brilliant Talmid Chachamim that we've ever had, and yet it becomes a Rasha, almost a bookend to Doeg HaDomi, who had assisted Shaul. Achitophel assists Avshalom in a way designed to destroy David. That and the fate of Avshalom we'll conclude with next week. Thank you very much.